Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Scott Pianowski, your host, back off vacation. Thanks to Andy Behrens for skippering the ship last week. We're back with my friend, my man Fred Zinke. We have a baseball season, hopefully, on just about on the horizon. And Fred's been grinding a lot of baseball stuff, as usual for us at Yahoo. We're going to take his temperature on what's going on in baseball, how to handle a season, and who to draft, all that good stuff. Aloha, Mr. Zinke.
Hey, Scott. You're right. I've been trying to keep up. Take your temperature. Solid pun for these days as baseball season ramps up. But anyways, yeah, I've been trying to keep up on all these little details going on with all the players coming into camp or not coming into camp for some. And yeah, excited to, you know, get back to really talking, you know, the nuances of the 2020 season rather than all the big picture concepts that we've been doing for the past few months.
Now, we'll do a little bit probably of both today. By the way, if you want to keep up with Fred Zinke, you can follow him on Twitter at Fred Zinke MLB. Excellent follow for all things baseball and all things just life. We'll do a silly draft at the end of the show, as we always do. And this week, it's going to be things related to the letter Z. I'm going to say right now that Fred Zinke is not eligible for this draft. So if you were going to pick yourself or put the pressure on me to pick Zinke, that's not going to happen. That's at the end of it. Let's start with baseball. And Fred, I just feel like this is the elephant in the room. I feel like I have to ask this before we get into any of the granular stuff. I mean, how confident are you that we can get this plane in the air and keep it in the air and have a 60-game season? What's your feeling on that?
So I'm pretty confident. I think the players, it depends how much I think the players, once they get into their team, as they're getting into their team bubble, like I know we had a fair amount of players test positive for COVID upon arrival, but then remembering that these are young people, maybe not always responsible, maybe coming from areas that have a lot of cases. I think I'm seeing some positive signs from some of the teams where the veterans are taking control of those locker rooms and saying, listen, like we're here, let's not waste our time, you know, over the next few months having COVID case after COVID case and we fall out of the standings. Like we're here, we're away from our families. Let's do everything we can here to stay healthy as a team and try to win as many games as possible. And I think that's the pressure. I don't love the setup that baseball chose. For example, I think hockey chose a much, much better setup. I think I would say almost 100% hockey will get through and they'll be a Stanley Cup champion by the fall. I don't think baseball chose a good setup, but I think the players and some common sense could hopefully rise above that. Now, I know that I'm saying that, you know, living in a country where there aren't a lot of COVID cases. And so maybe I'm a little, I don't know, immune, I guess, to what's going on, especially in the southern U.S., but I'm pretty optimistic. What about you?
I don't know what to think with 2020. It's I said before we went on air, it's a strange, I said the strangest year of my life, but then I realized that's the silly thing to say. I think it's the strangest year of everybody's life. I just don't have anything to compare it to. And, you know, I every day I toggle with the idea that I want to stay informed, but I don't want to dwell on what's going on. You know, I want to stay positive, but I want to be realistic and, you know, be respectful to my neighbors, respectful to people I come into contact with, because I mean, you know, there's no way you can I don't have the facilities to have a life where I don't come into contact with anybody. I don't think that's realistic, but you know, I try to be mindful of everybody else and do my part, listen to the people smarter than me, which, you know, there's no shortage of people like that. Let me ask you, talking about fantasy baseball now, a lot of people drafted their leagues in the spring, you know, in February, in March. Now we're looking at a season. Do you think, would you say, well, hey, we should redraft, or we should, you know, hold some of our rosters and adjust the rest of them? Should we change rules? Or if you were starting a new league, I'm curious what rules you would change. I mean, this is a season like unlike any other. What type of tinkering do you sign off on?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of arguments on both sides of the redraft debate. I think my stance on the redraft debate is I would not, for in most cases, I would just play it where it lies. And, you know, sometimes you draft a fantasy team and three arms blow out in April from your pitching staff. And, you know, in this case, you know, your team actually is healthier now than it normally would be in July. You know, everyone's going to have some pluses and minuses from all the changes that have happened. Some people will be a little more impacted than others. I'm okay, like, for example, in our Tout Wars leagues and our labor leagues, like, we're not redrafting. The one case I could see for redrafting, what I think would be kind of cool if you can do it, social distancing or whatever, If you're in a home league and you drafted and your group wants to redraft, I think that could be just a fun exercise. Like you said, it's been a long, crummy year already. You know, if a bunch of buddies, longtime friends in a home league can get together and whether online or otherwise and safely, you know, do a redraft just to get themselves kind of hyped for baseball season again, I think this season from a fantasy perspective is going to be really fun. So, you know, I think people just need to kind of let go and just get into it once they start playing. So I think redrafting in that regard would be fine. I'm actually interested in your take. What do you think about the redraft debate?
The leagues that I've already drafted, and I'm just going to leave as is, the Friends and Family League is not going to redraft. I may tinker with a couple of settings, but I won't make any major changes. It's tempting to do a couple of things. I've heard some people argue maybe innings pitched is better than wins, not just in this season too. Some people think that in general, and I can see the case for that. I don't want to do anything major that upsets the competitive integrity of the league. But to me, the question shifts to, I'm in one keeper league. It's a long running league with a bunch of people who grew up in New England. We used to call it the Chelmsford League because most of us lived in Chelmsford. I don't think any of us live in Chelmsford anymore because we've all gone on with our lives, but we're still really good friends. The core group goes back to the 90s, early 90s. That league is just not going to play this year. We've had talk about maybe doing a side league, but we've decided just, you know, the keeper integrity needs to be put on ice for a year because, you know, if somebody loaded up for the season and they don't get a full season or they don't get what the 6 months they thought they were going to get, or maybe the season lasts 3 weeks, it just seemed like there were too many potential pitfalls. So that I think we're just going to sit that year out. I'm not even sure we're going to do anything on the side. But how do you feel about a keeper league? Would you plow forward, or would you want to do something different?
I guess it just depends on how much you want to play. Like, just you say you and your friends, like, how much do you want to have a league together this year? I wondered if I'm not a big keeper league guy, so I'm out of the loop a little bit with my perspective on this. But I wondered, could your keeper league play this year but extend? So I'm assuming if it's a keeper league, it's not a dynasty, it's a keeper. You can keep each guy for a certain amount of years, right? And then you have to release them back into the pool. Is that correct?
Yeah, players have different categories. Anybody drafted it's a draft league. So anybody who's drafted in the first 5 rounds can never be kept. And then after that, it depends on what round they were drafted. If somebody 1 year hit on Albert Pujols in the 30th round, so they had options on him for like 4 or 5 different years. If you have somebody who's, say, round 6 to round, I think, 15, you can only keep him for a year.
Right. So I wondered if you could play your – I don't know. It's tricky. If you could play your league but not count this season.
And then reset it. Okay. I guess you could do that.
If this was your last year with, you know, whatever, Edwin Diaz or something, if this was your last year where you could keep Edwin Diaz, it isn't. Now you could keep him for one more year if you want to, because just since this wasn't a full season. Like I said, I think it starts first and foremost with just how much does the group want to play? Like, maybe they're all in other leagues and they're like, oh, I'm good. I can just sit this keeper league out for a year. If it's kind of like a big thing that keeps the group in touch, then I think you find a way to play because the social aspect of it is bigger than the competitive aspect of it. And you just tweak your rules. I don't know. I guess it's a tough call. I even think the redraft decision comes back to how many leagues are you in? Like, you and I, Scott, for example, are probably both in a lot of leagues, like, or a fair amount of leagues. I don't think I could have time to redraft all the leagues that I've already drafted and draft some other leagues. Like, I don't think I have time to do 8 drafts or something like that. Like, I could do it.
Sure.
Just bid farewell to my family until opening day. But I don't know if I have time to draft, say, like 8 teams between now and opening day.
I do want to give a pitch to Yahoo Sports, Yahoo Fantasy. They have opened up the draft calendar. So if you, I believe you can actually schedule a draft until the end of August if you so desire. So if you not even sure you want to play, then they get on the field and you get that Jones. You can still draft even after the season has started. So go over to Yahoo Fantasy, and if you're so inclined, get into a league, get some guys together. Now, it's funny that league, you talk about the social component. Again, some of my best friends are in that league, and this year we all get together, as many of us as we can. We get together and draft in person. Occasionally, there's going to be a couple remote people year in and year out who can't make it for whatever reason. But most of us were coming back east this year. My friend Steve Gleason, his band was going to play the night before. It was, you know, the whole weekend is just – and then usually they're really nice about scheduling it around Tout Wars. So that weekend for me is like Tout Wars – I see my friends, my friend's band plays. It's just, you know, such an awesome weekend. One thing that we do in that league that I mentioned from time to time, just a rule change I really like, a rule tweak that we have, and again, this is a keeper league, it's a draft league, it's a keeper league, is the draft order for the next season. Okay, and I want you to think about maybe some format, some tweaks of rules that you like. This is something that we do in this league. If you come in fifth, you have the first pick in next year's draft. There's 14 teams in our league. And our draft order goes 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 4, 12, 3, 13, 2, 14, 1. And so what that does is it gives everybody, no matter if you're going for the money, you're going to draft near the bottom of the draft, and everybody else is jostling, you know, for those really good draft slots. And if you're one of the lower teams in the league, because again, keeper league, you know, some people might want to dump, say, I'm going to get rid of all my expiring contracts. You do that at the risk of messing with next year's draft order. And if you're near the bottom of the standings, every slot you move up, actually, until you get to the middle of the draft, is a two-slot jump. You know, if you're in last place and you jump to 13th place, you've actually jumped two spots in our draft order. So that's something I think is really good to keep everybody engaged, whether or not you're going for a championship or a cash spot. What are some of the hybrid formats that you like? I mean, are you just a straight 5x5 guy? Do you like OBP more? I mean, we use that in Tout Wars. Is there anything that you like, maybe, you know, for this year or just in general, that you think is a good way to tweak the rules?
Yeah, I love in the keeper leagues, like I love finding incentives. I think we do that even without the keeper format in Tout Wars, where your fab money the next year is impacted by the standings the previous year. I love finding ways to keep everybody engaged, you know, everybody present all the way through. I think even in a one-year league, it depends on the, like, I'm a big 5x5 roto guy. If you're a head-to-head guy, having a consolation playoff and having a prize, an actual prize for the winning the consolation playoff, like dividing up your prize money that way so that the guys in the bottom half of the league, you know, have a reason to stay competitive. I think that's a huge one. I think anything that can, if fantasy baseball is such a long grind, that I think anything that encourages people to still grind waivers in July, August, and September, I think that's the makings. To me, the best fantasy leagues, the reason that I end up going in high stakes leagues, or the reason I end up going in a lot of the industry leagues, Tout Wars, Labor, those kinds of leagues, is because you'll see people play them out right up until the very end. You'll see teams in ninth place making, you know, fab additions on September 15th. And that's what I want. You know, that's as close as you can get to the real thing, right? Every major league team doesn't totally compete till the end of the season, but to a degree, they're all trying to the end of the season. I think that figuring that out, and I think your draft order idea is a really good one. As far as categories go, I've always, for baseball, like I football, I love to play around with things. Like I'm doing the Scott Fishbowl right now. I know you are too. And I love his oddball scoring system, and it really makes you think. And for baseball, I've always stayed pretty 5x5. I like OBP. That is something that I got my head around through Tout Wars. And I don't know about you, but I've come to like OBP. It's good news when your guy draws a walk. When one of your players draws a walk in real life, it's good news. When he draws a walk for your fantasy team, it should be good news.
I agree. You know, it's still hard for me to wrap my hands around the idea that the original rotisserie fantasy baseball didn't have runs scored as a category. You know, the whole game is about scoring and preventing runs, and runs scored weren't a category for whatever reason, nor were strikeouts. And one of the really nice things about 5x5, when you incorporate strikeouts, is it makes it a lot harder to do some of the gimmicky things that maybe you could do if strikeouts didn't exist, you know, should there be innings limits, stuff like that. So I do think 5x5 is the best format, although I'm not opposed to OBP. I played in some other leagues that are a little bit more hybrid, some leagues that used OPS or slugging percentage, 6x6, 7x7 leagues. Some of my head-to-head leagues have a lot more tinkering with the categories, which I'm fine with. But, you know, a 5x5, I still think, is the best game. Before we talk about some individual players, let me just ask you one other thing. If you're setting up a league now, or even if you're in a league that's already drafted, how many games, the 60-game schedule is on paper, how many games do you feel like they need to play before we need to consider the league being legitimate? Meaning, let's say, for example, the season got washed out with a week left to go. Everybody played, you know, 50 or 55 or 53 games or something like that. I think most people would say, okay, that's close to just about the full season they had scheduled. This is still a legitimate result. I think leagues need to decide now how much needs to go on paper before they're actually going to consider the result legitimate. You know, maybe you may feel that they have to play the whole season, and if they don't, you won't consider it that way. But Where do you come down on that? What's a legitimate result or a legitimate season as far as what we have in front of us?
Yeah, I feel like I think the NFBC said 40, which to me felt like a fair number, two-thirds of the season. Like that, to me, that felt like a pretty fair number. Now, I know they have like they're really like that's a bigger operation. They've got legal concerns and prize money and things like that. Because all the teams won't play the same amount of games if baseball just stops on any random day, then that's certainly a tricky one. I think 40, and I could consider it pretty legitimate. I got to be honest, though. I think the real it's already such a mishmash. For me to consider it really legitimate, I think we need to play the 60. I think the 60 needs to happen because then every team plays the same amount of games. People who were thinking ahead or stashing someone like that, those situations all play out. Like we've already got enough of a mix up. I said early in this process that two things for me are both true. If you win your league this year, I'm giving you full credit. If you just do terribly in all your leagues this year, because it just don't get your head around the 60 game season, I'm not disparaging anyone who that happens to. For anyone I know in the industry or something who just has a bunch of 12th place finishes this year, they just didn't get their head around the 60 games. That's not changing how I view that person as, you know, a fantasy baseball analyst. It's just an oddball year. So I kind of feel like though in my mind, it's the whole 60.
Interesting. I think 40 is an interesting cutoff. I haven't still, there's one of my leagues that I generally run that we haven't decided if we're going to have a league yet or not. I still need to get some emails out and get some conversation going. I've wanted to have as much information as I could before I went to that step. And maybe this is the week. I mean, it's going to have to be soon because the season is, less than 2 weeks away now, which is exciting. And also, I guess a little bit scary too, just given the tone of the season, but the tone of the year, but, I can see the 40. You make an interesting case for 60. I mean, you're always so logical. It's very hard to disagree with you. And I do agree that I know it sounds a little bit contradictory. I will feel like anybody who wins a league deserves credit, but I find it hard to come down on anybody who doesn't have a strong season for whatever reason. So I think both of those things can exist together.
Sorry to interrupt, Scott. I can give you one oddball idea that I haven't heard anyone in the industry float. I haven't heard anyone float it that I think would be a fun exercise to try. And again, it wouldn't be for big money. It would be a cool one among friends. But I think it would be fun if a group of people drafted for this season and next season, since this season's so short. So it's, let's say, Roto. So you're going to draft now. It's going to be your team. You're going to own, roster all your players. Whatever, ads, drops, whatever, freeze the rosters after the 60 games, reopen them where do some sort of format where you can drop players for in the draft, something like that, and alter your roster, or just a waiver wire system in March. But I think one fun thing that no one's really ever talked about or considered, it'd just be an oddball thing to do, not a standard fantasy thing, but would be to play, instead of a 60-game season, a 222-game season. That goes all the way till next September, where you'd be drafting guys for this year and for next year. And like I say, I think there'd be a lot of fun strategy with that. And you could draft a Joe Adell right now and take your lumps a little bit in the shortened season, hoping you get all of his production next year. I think there's fun things you can do if you let your mind flow into them.
Definitely interesting ideas there. One thing we did with some Yahoo colleagues last year, I don't know if we're going to do it this year, but we had a DFS contest that ran every day of the season. And there were a healthy amount of your lowest scores that were dropped. I don't know if it was 50 or 60 or something like that. But, we had, and I think Alex Healy, who's one of our marketing guys and a really good fantasy player. I'm pretty sure he won that league. But it was fun. And I think DFS is a great thing to keep in mind this year if, for whatever reason, your regular leagues aren't running or you just don't feel up to it this year. But then the season starts and you want to get some involvement. I mean, the great thing about DFS is you can step into it when you want to. And then you're not obligated to play it the next day if you don't feel like it. You can take a week off. You're going on vacation. You get other things going on. But, maybe there's a Sunday. You feel engaged with the games that day. And you think, I can join a DFS contest. I can challenge a friend, play head-to-head, whatever it is. It's just a great way to step in when you have the time. So let's talk a little bit about the player pool. And I've been toying around with, again, I'm not even sure if I have drafts to come because I have to decide on a couple of leagues. But I've been toying with, if I were to step into a draft today, that'd be really pitching heavy with a lot of the news that's been related to the pitchers and teams talking about how they want to early on just not go deep with their starters, even their primary guys. I'm just getting kind of cold feet about the Gerrit Coles and the Max Scherzers and the Justin Verlanders that I would normally take in a first round or second round. I don't know if I want to go there. And then it just gets, you know, those are the best guys. And it gets worse after that. If I were to draft right now, I think my first 10 picks would probably be anywhere from 7 to 9 hitters, maybe even all 10 hitters. What do you say about stepping into a hitter strategy? Would you be more balanced? Would you even be pitching heavy? What's the general strategy you would approach if you were heading into a mixed league right now?
Yeah, I would be so I thought at the beginning of July that I would go very hitter heavy, thinking the same thing, like just the pitching's going to be such a mess. I'll try to piece it together. The more I've been kind of following each team, the more comfortable I am with investing a fair amount in pitchers. But pitchers on certain teams or certain pitchers, because information's starting to come out about there's certain pitchers who could throw 6 innings tomorrow, and then there's certain pitchers who could only throw 2 or 3. So I think the daily research right now is huge, and just figuring out which pitchers are stretched out and which ones aren't, and which teams, you know, are going to allow their pitchers to throw 5 or more innings. I think with some good pitchers early in the season who are stretched out, Cole being one of them, you could maybe get ahead on wins in your league and then give yourself a lot of flexibility in September. I'm more comfortable now maybe doing like a stars and scrubs pitching thing. I'm very interested to see how waivers play out this season. This is going to be the first ever fantasy baseball season where NFL teams will be in training camp for basically the entire fantasy baseball season. And we know how big fantasy football is. And NFL teams will be playing games for roughly half of the baseball season. How much is that going to impact, you know, fantasy managers' attention to the waiver wire on Sundays, say in those fab leagues, or just the waiver wire during the week in the daily transaction leagues? Could you grind pitching? So I'm kind of leaning now towards maybe a bit of a stars and scrubs where I get a couple Clevinger types or Scherzer types, like a couple really early, and then, you know, I'll just grind the back end of my rotation. And I'm really debating on closers. I've noticed they're starting to go up in drafts. I can see why. But as the prices go up, I wonder if they'll go up to the point where I'm just out on them.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, is what your save strategy mm-hmm. would be. And you know, in a 2-month season, I have a feeling that the free agency habits or the fab habits might resemble a football season where there's just, you know, you don't have any time to wait in football. I mean, look, there's certain times, there's always going to be certain contexts where you might wait on a player for several weeks in a football season. But generally, it's like, look, you got to get ahead of it right away. You can't afford to go 0-3. You can't afford to go 1-4. That could be the end of your season. And so you need to be proactive. And a lot of times it's a week-to-week thing with football. You can't think about what's, especially once you get behind the eight ball a little bit. I wonder if we'll see more proactiveness or aggressiveness, use whatever word you want, towards free agency habits and fantasy baseball this year. Again, I think maybe a fantasy football mindset might apply to fantasy baseball this year.
Oh, 100%. I think, for example, if you see a new closer emerge in that first 10-day period, that closer's going for $700 out of $1,000 or something like that, or $70 out of $100 or something in a fab league. I think people, it's the same as if you see like a new run. You're right. It's fantasy football all over again. If you see a new running back emerge or a receiver get 120 yards in week one, he's going for a monster amount in fab that right away, because maybe you get a full season out of him and you just can't afford to wait. I think the same thing is going to happen where people will be really aggressive early on. And then for those who stick with it, there'll probably be a lot of deals late, and it'll be the closers. If someone gets saves early on, like, they're going to go for a lot. And I just haven't, as you know, I'm pretty comfortable punting saves. I've done that a lot over the years. So, and I'm comfortable doing it again. I get why closers are going early. There's a better chance that they'll hold their job all season now because it's a shorter season. Starting pitching is such a mess. So maybe just steer into some closers, do well in saves, things like that. But we're also playing on a really small sample size with closers. Like, we're playing on a small sample size with everyone, but closers are going to throw about 25 innings. It only takes, you know, 2 or 3 of those innings to go really bad before all of a sudden your closer, who was supposed to help your ratios, ended up hurting them.
Now, one thing that's really changed from the landscape early in the spring, I think we may have hinted about it earlier, you know, some guys who were hurt aren't hurt anymore. Of course, we do have injury news leaking out, or you know, player personal news leaking out the last couple of weeks, and sometimes you have to read between the lines of what's actually going on. But you know, it seems like it was such a long time ago, but you know, we weren't sure if Justin Verlander would be ready for the start of the season. There were some injury issues with Scherzer, a couple of Yankees, Judge and Stanton had injury flags that may or may not have gone away. You recently wrote about some of the injuries and updating some situations with a Yahoo piece a few days ago. What did you find out there? And some of the big names I've mentioned, are you in or out on those guys if you were redrafting today?
Yeah, so in the I think this one's a big picture, a very big picture discussion for me. Where, so Scott, you've always been someone who's really out on injured players as we go through the season. Like, you try to really resist giving them the benefit of the doubt. I'm going to take that and that mentality and times it by 10 this year. If players are hurt, I don't really want them. There's just not the time for it to all even out, you know, for you to hold someone for a month and then they come back and you get months of good production possibly from them. If the player's not healthy, for good example, like Cole Hamels, who's not a big, you know, move the needle type arm anymore, but I saw Cole Hamels has a bit of an injury issue right now, completely off my draft list. Like, no, I'm not interested in starting a 60 game season with an injured pitcher. The injured pitcher would have to be like a Max Scherzer type, where you're willing to eat three starts and try to get the last 9 or 10. So Aaron Judge, totally out. I'm fine with Stanton because it looks like he can play every day right now. And it'll be the same. I've given significant drops to especially pitchers who are late coming into camp because they've been dealing with COVID. Whether they had a lot of symptoms or not, the bottom line is they're way behind. The season starts in less than 2 weeks. If I'm going to draft a closer, it's not going to be Kenley Jansen, for example, at this point. I want a closer who's been in camp the whole time and is ready to go. He says he'll be ready to go. Hey, maybe he'll be ready to go. I can afford to miss out and just take some. I'll just take the next closer on my list who's been in camp the whole time. Like, it's just such a small amount of time. I also think during the season, my basic philosophy with injured players will be to just drop them. If you have IL spots, right, go ahead and use the IL spots. But if you don't have IL spots, or if your IL spots are full, I'm not holding on to them. Like, if Bo Bichette strains a hamstring in week two and he's going to miss at least four to six weeks, I'm out. I'm not holding them and hoping for the last 3 weeks. I don't know if you think that's me going too far with it, but I think this turns in a little bit to fantasy football, where let's figure out next week and that's all that really matters.
Yeah, that does overlap with a lot of the strategies that I've used for a long time, and maybe they're more fantasy football strategies generally than fantasy baseball, though they do apply to fantasy baseball as well. But it's just more of the micro and not the macro. And, you know, I always thought my whole idea in fantasy football has been, I remember one year I had Andre Johnson was hurt and they said 3 to 6 weeks. And when I hear 3 to 6 weeks on a player, I hear the six and don't consider the three. I mean, you know, these guys have been supermen their whole lives. And you know, a lot of times a player gets hurt and he can hear his biological clock ticking, or he wants to protect his job in the lineup, or maybe he's playing for a new contract or something. There's never been a good reason for anybody to tell us the truth about an injury or to say that they're more hurt than we know. There's all sorts of things. They don't want an opponent to have a competitive advantage, or they don't want to hurt their bargaining position or whatever it is. So when I hear 3 to 6, 4 to 6 windows, I always think of the high side as more likely. And sometimes players come back quickly. Of course, also, and this is a major problem in football, but it could be a problem in baseball too, is what you get in this football, you get this gap week, okay, where a player finally comes back and then, you know, is he on a snap count? Is he going to go back into his normal role? Is he sharp? Is he at the level that you would expect him to be in the normal flow of a season? That becomes a problem too. So I just boil that down to injury optimism is not your friend.
That's right. And I think in this season too, like, okay, again, let's say a player goes down with a pulled hamstring in the second week of the season, say right around August 1st, and he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. I think in a lot of situations, especially because Major League Baseball didn't expand the postseason field, I think in a lot of situations that team might end up just shutting the player down. I mean, when you think about it, okay, so at this point, the player's played maybe 10 baseball games all year. You know, it's not a typical August 1st injury where the player's played 80 or 90 games already this year. He's played like 10 games. He barely got going. Now he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. There's no minor league system for him to go and play rehab games and work his way up that way. I know they have a taxi roster where you can do some, you know, he could do some things there. You know, let's like we don't even have to go down to the very bottom teams. Like, let's just say you're the San Diego Padres, and you know, someone Tatis pulls a hamstring in on August 1st, and he's 4 to 6 weeks. Now you're into September. Maybe things haven't gone great. You're a few games out. You're probably not going to make the postseason. He only played 10 games all year. What are you rushing him back for to play 10 more at the end? And, you know, and you don't have a minor league system for him to play real rehab games. And I could see the teams just saying, forget it. This whole thing's been a bit of a gong show already. He's one of our core players. Go home, Fernando. You know, go home and rehab, and we'll see you back in February. And we'll see you in February. So I even think that with me being really negative about injuries this year, like you were saying, I always try to think the high end of the injury timetable. Now I'm going to also be thinking, like, what will this team's motivation be in this shortened season to even bring the player back? If the Yankees have an injury, they'll bring him back because they think they're going to be playing all through October. A lot of other teams, I wonder if they will.
Right. You see that a lot of times with young pitchers, right? One of the games we have to play in a regular fantasy season is what young pitchers are coming close to their innings, you know, caps, or you know, a team, a young star on a team that isn't going anywhere. At what point does it just make sense to say, look, just go home and don't pitch the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season, because we're thinking long term. You know, we're not going to make the playoffs this year. We want you to be healthy next year and for a long time. There's just nothing to gain. So teams could be facing those questions really soon in the way that the season is structured. You did a recent piece on, as we know, Universal DH is coming in this year, and maybe it will stick for a while. I've always kind of liked the idea that the leagues had different personalities. One was DH, one wasn't DH. I know it's no fun to watch pitchers hitting and flailing away, or get, you know, God forbid, getting hurt on the baselines. But at least the games had different shapes to them a little bit, and it did also have it factored into playability of fantasy. So I've never been really triggered by the DH debate, but you know, okay, Universal DH, we'll try it this year. We'll see how it goes. It obviously has fantasy ramifications. I like to call this the Howie Kendrick segment, because every time I talk about Universal DH, I end up coming to Kendrick as a guy who I like for that reason. I think Dalton Del Don, our colleague, had some Kendrick pub recently, and I know you did a DH piece, and Kendrick showed up. So, you know, at Yahoo Sports, we're all in on Howie Kendrick in 2020. Who else did you find maybe gain some value with a Universal DH season?
Yeah, Jock Peterson was kind of number one for me, because when we were drafting in March, I just couldn't figure out that Dodgers trade with the Angels that fell through. I didn't really understand that they were, it felt like they were giving Ross Stripling and Jock Peterson to the Angels for, I felt like, very little. I still don't understand what the motivation was. I can't believe the Angels backed out on it.
But I think there's some salary considerations too.
Sure. And I think the Dodgers were trying to thin out their outfield, not seeing this DH thing coming, you know. I think they were trying to thin their outfield. And when it fell through and they hadn't moved Peterson, you just weren't sure how that whole situation was going to play out, because they didn't really have enough room for all their outfielders. Well, now they do. Fun Jock Peterson stat is he hit 36 home runs last year. All of them came against righties. He could hit, well, he won't hit leadoff now because Mookie Betts is there, but he should be hitting very, very high in the order when they play a righty. I think he's amazing for daily transaction games like our Yahoo games. Because you know exactly when you're going to get all of his production, and you can sit him in all the other days. And then I think the Brewers duo of Ryan Braun and Justin Smoke, I think that's the other duo that I really saw get a big increase. Being a DH should be really good for Ryan Braun, who's quietly still one of those guys who in a full season, if he didn't get hurt, in a full season, he can still get you maybe 20 homers, 10 steals. If he's a DH, maybe he could even make it 25-15 or something like that. Like, I know there's a lot of Ryan Braun haters out there, and I totally get all the reasons why you would be. But he is an outstanding talent who is on the tail end of his career and probably perfectly suited to be a DH. And Justin Smoke, just he joins this massive group of hitters now we have around baseball who can hit plenty of home runs, but not for average, and they're not going to steal any bases. And we'll just throw Justin Smoke on the pile, but he's one more guy who in the late rounds of your draft, if you want someone who, you know, over a full season would have legit had 25 to 35 home run power with a 230 to 250 average, there's another option for you. So, and I will say I'm not quite as high on Howie Kendrick, I think, as you and Dalton are. I do think he'll play more, but I have trouble. I know the baseball changed, but I have trouble trusting his The batting, his batting average last year was about 50 points higher than his career average, and his power output last year was a lot better than usual. I think it was like the second highest homer total in his career. And he was, when that happens in your mid 30s, I think usually the regression monster is coming for you the next year. So, I think Howie Kendrick, now that they have the DH, and there's a lot of nice parks now that the NL East is going to the AL East, I think that's a nice little boost. You know, but I think Howie Kendrick could totally play most days, hit 290 to 300, you know, hit in the middle, fairly like, around the middle of the lineup, fifth, sixth, you know, maybe even get in the top four on some occasions. So I think he's a mixed league guy. And I think the multi-position eligibility is nice. Again, in a daily game, if I had someone like Jock Peterson, I'd love to have someone like Howie Kendrick to complement him, where I can move Kendrick all around my lineup, taking out Peterson the day he faces a lefty, and lots of other hitters in similar types of situations.
Yeah, you know, and also he benefits from Ryan Zimmerman opting out of the season, just opens up more playing time and just another way for him to get his name in the lineup card. If I was going to rebrand this segment away from Kendrick, Garrett Hampson is another guy who's really interesting to me, because he was out of his mind in September. I think he stole nine bases. He hit a bunch of home runs. We know, of course, Colorado, goes without saying what a great place to hit that place is. And of course, they're stepping right into the summer too. It's not like they're dealing with April Colorado games where maybe the weather won't be so favorable for the offense. You would think, you know, heat, humidity, ball flying, that's just good for the Colorado environment. Plus, the park is so big, it always plays well for batting average. The thing I wasn't sure with Hampson is that they have a lot of players who play certain positions. It's overlap. Is he going to play all the time? Is he going to be able to have a 1-for-13 slump and then still see his name on the lineup card the next day? But with the universal DH, I think Hampson probably projects to an everyday player for them. And he had that category juice that he showed. I mean, a lot of people liked him, including me, at the beginning of last season. It really didn't start off well for him. He got buried pretty quickly. I think he even got sent down to the minors at one point. But he was playing at such a high level at the end of last year. I just wonder if the Bill James rules of signature significance kick in, that he was so productive that the sample isn't as important. That it's like, any, you know, James would say, okay, anybody who struck out 15 batters in a game is probably somebody we have to take seriously, even if it's just one game, because you have to have a certain amount of skill to be able to pull that off. I wonder if what Hampson did down the stretch, because the significance of the amplitude of the sample was so notable, he'd be somebody I'd be trying to draft if I was drafting today.
Yeah, I can understand that. His average draft position, I find lately, has really skyrocketed since the DH. I think a lot of people are seeing the situation the same way you are, where the addition of the DH, you know, like I'm seeing him in the 150s or so for an ADP, which is like pretty, that's a pretty significant investment at that point. You could still get a mid-tier closer, for example, around that point in time. You know, get your number three starter or something like that. So his ADP is pretty high. I don't know if I would go all the way up there. I don't trust the Rockies. Like you mentioned, will he survive the 1-for-13 slump? Like I don't know. I don't trust. If David Dahl gets his annual injury here in the next couple of weeks, then I would be way more on board with Garrett Hampson, because then, you know, the playing time could go through the roof. But, you know, they still have Raimel Tapia. Sam Hilliard's a really interesting guy. Ian Desmond being out now, choosing to opt out of the season, does create more playing time. They have Brendan Rodgers coming back, who's their, you know, their best position playing prospect. So the Rockies certainly are a team that benefits from having that DH spot. And Charlie Blackman's still not in camp, although I think he will be, and I think he'll be in the lineup on opening day. I just wish I trusted. Man, the Rockies would just be so much better for fantasy if they could make some sensible decisions, or maybe let us manage their team, because, you know, just that home environment is so advantageous. And then they somehow kind of mess it up by bringing in guys like Desmond and then blocking their younger players. And like you said, like if Hampson gets off to a good, I think if Hampson gets off to a good start, like he could be huge. Like he'd be a top 50 player this year. My problem is if he gets off for the 1-for-13, all of a sudden, does he only play one of the next four games or something like that? That's my concern with the Rockies.
And I want to be clear, I agree with everything you said. When I say 1-for-13 slump, I mean, I'm putting the air quotes around slump, because I think most smart teams would never hold a 1-for-13 against anybody. It's just in a reasonable range of outcome. I mean, JD Martinez is going to go 1-for-13 sometimes. Mike Trout is going to go 1-for-13 sometimes. And I guess I should probably at some point ask you how you feel about Trout this year. Let's do that right now. Trout would have been the first, second, or third pick in any fantasy draft. And I think I would guess, probably closer to the consensus number one pick than anybody else back in March. He's had some ambivalence, understandably so, about playing. He's got a baby coming. He's got a young wife. Where would you stand on Mike Trout if you were drafting right now?
Yeah, I'm mostly not going to draft him, you know, unless he really falls. I think he just won't really fall. I think I'm kind of out on Trout for the first two rounds. For example, in the first round, I can just get a stud hitter like a Lindor or someone like that who doesn't have any issues surrounding him like Trout does. So I'd rather just do that for the potential that Trout might be a little bit better. We know Trout's going to miss some time for the birth of his child, whether that's three games, whether it's six games, whatever. He's going to miss some time. If you prorated that out to a full season, you know, it could be the equivalent of missing, like if he misses half to 1 week, you prorate that to a full season, it's the equivalent to him missing like a week and a half to 3 weeks or so in a full season. And there is the chance, you just never know whether he comes back or not, depending on how the birth goes, when the birth is, how the Angels are doing, all these other things, the health of his wife afterwards. Like, we just don't really know. And I don't think I need to play with that. There's so many, fantasy baseball is such a deep game. If this was football, I'd probably just go for it. In baseball, there's such a deep game that there's just always more players. So for me, I'd start to consider Trout around round three. He'll just be gone by round three. And I get it. Like, I also get that there's no prize for finishing sixth. So if someone wants to go into Trout at the end of round one and beginning of round two, I get it. Again, like if you're picking 12th in a league and you can get Mike Trout on the 1-2 turn, you'd be like, well, I couldn't have done that a few months ago. I couldn't have done that any time in the last 7 years. So I'll go for it and cross my fingers. But because we know he's going to miss some time for sure, I'm out. Are you more optimistic than I am?
No, I pushed him out of my first round, and I still see him going in some of the visible drafts that have, you know, NFBC drafts have been going on. I still see him landing in the first round more often than not. So I'm probably not even going to have a decision to make. I'm so floor based. I feel like anybody who you could take in the first round of a fantasy draft already has upside. Because people say, oh, you got to play for upside. Well, I can find 12 guys who have tremendous upsides. You know, their upsides are MVP/Cy Young winner. So I'm not worried about that. I'm just so floor driven that tends to make me out on a player like that. Let's give, before we get to our Z draft, let's give people just maybe a name that of somebody who is increased in value, you feel differently about than you did a few months ago, to the positive. I wasn't going to draft Alex Verdugo in the spring, not so much because of the new team, because I liked him going to Fenway Park. He was in the Mookie Betts David Price deal, but he wasn't healthy. I wasn't sure that he would get off to a good start, and maybe I wouldn't have the patience to hold on to him. Well, he's healthy now. I really like his Statcast profile, and I think, you know, Fenway Park can be a great place for a lefty hitter to bat. I mean, look at Fred Lynn's 1979 home stats sometime, and there's been a number of them. You know, obviously, David Ortiz loved hitting at Fenway because he knew how to use the wall. I think Verdugo could have a really nice profile in Fenway Park, and he's been somebody, again, a few months ago, wasn't going to draft him. Now he's on my radar where he's falling, which probably somewhere in like the teen rounds. Who's a player that maybe you weren't in on a few months ago that you would be excited to draft right now?
Yeah, I'll give you two, and they're on the same team. One's a pitcher, one's a hitter. I'll say Mike Clevinger. I think Clevinger is perfect for what we're going for this season. He's a pitcher who we know on a per start basis can be as good as any pitcher in baseball, pretty much. With the way he was last year, but we really struggled to project him for 32 starts. I can project him for 12. Like, I can go ahead and just go for that. I think all of those pitchers I'm kind of interested in, the James Paxtons, the Strasburgs, like, I think I'm okay with those guys now. Clevinger, I have very high. And then a lower ranked guy just on Clevinger's team, just the Indians saying yesterday that Cesar Hernandez is going to be their leadoff hitter at the start of the season, and Lindor is going to hit third, which makes some sense to me. I've always liked Hernandez. I think he's like just one of those solid baseball players. But he's someone who either hits first in your lineup or he hits like 7-8-9. And I thought he was going to hit 7-8-9. I still didn't mind him at that. But now that he's hitting leadoff, he'll steal a few bases in the season. He'll hit a few home runs. He could hit 280. And he should score plenty of runs. Like, you've got Carlos Santana, Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Franmil Reyes, like that's kind of 2 through 5 in some order. I think you can score a lot of runs hitting atop that Indians lineup, and the favorable schedule, a lot of Royals games, a lot of Tigers games. So that's like a late round if your second base is still open guy, I think, to consider.
Yeah, he was one of my guys in the spring, and I'm afraid that the value maybe won't be as great as it was. I think, again, he's we're at a time where there isn't a ton of baseball news, and it's been announced that he's their leadoff hitter, and people are going to notice that. There's nowhere for that news to hide. But I like a player who can run without collapsing your power. I mean, he's a guy over a full season who could maybe steal 20 bases, but also hit 12 or 14 home runs or something like that. Really good on base skills, which even if you're just playing standard 5x5, I mean, it helps that he's on base. He's going to help his run scored. It's going to protect his batting average to some degree. He's just one of those boring value veterans that I tend to gravitate to. Boring value is often my jam in fantasy baseball, so I love that. And Clevinger healthy, he's one of those guys when he's pitching, it's just fun just to have the Indians game on one of your TVs or your computer screen or whatever, because he's got so many great off speed pitches, and he's just a certain thing about certain moxie or presence to Clevinger that I've always liked. So he's a fun guy to have, and if I do redraft a few more times, I'd like to get some Clevinger shares as well. We've been picking the brain of Fred Zinke, one of our finest fantasy baseball writers in the industry. Been great having him as a Yahoo colleague the last few seasons. He's cranking out all sorts of awesome work. So as you get ramped up for that draft that you didn't expect that you'd be having in July, make sure you're checking out Fred's content. Again, on Twitter, Fred Zinke MLB. Now we're going to transition to the silly part of our show. We're going to do a 5-round draft. In honor of Mr. Zinke, we're going to draft stuff related to the letter Z. Zinke is off the board. It cannot be drafted. But we don't want to get sued by the people who run these drafts. So, Fred, I'm a sporting guy. I'll give you the first pick in the letter Z draft.
Okay, I'm going to start with Zambonis and Zamboni drivers.
Yeah.
Zambonis are awesome because one thing, if you hang out at just local hockey arenas, there's nothing little kids love more than watching the Zamboni. Like if you watch a bunch of 5-year-olds, like they might like watching the Zamboni do his laps, trying to get him to honk the horn as much as they like actually playing hockey. And then the story this year about, about a Zamboni driver, being able to play in an NHL game, a guy who can drive Zambonis, I think is just like unreal. That's one of the great sports stories. We had so many bad things happen in 2020. That's one of the coolest things to happen in 2020. But I think Zambonis, named after Frank Zamboni, the inventor of the Zamboni, is just I don't know. That's got to be my first pick. That was the first thing that came to my mind when you mentioned that we were going to do the letter Z.
Yeah, it's a great pick. I actually didn't make that deep of a draft list, so I can't afford you to pick too many things that I wanted. But I knew Zamboni wasn't going to last long, so that was going to be one of my early picks and a worthy 1.01 selection here. I'm going to start with ZZ Top, a band that, when I was a kid, ZZ Top was really big with the Eliminator album and like the MTV videos and stuff. And I thought those songs were okay. I didn't think they were great. I thought the videos were all right. I thought a lot of them kind of muddled together. And I remember one time I was actually in a press box and somebody was telling me they were going to see ZZ Top. And I said something really snarky about it, which I regret now because I later went back and listened to, and I know this is kind of cliche, but I listened to all the early stuff of ZZ Top and all this, just this boogie woogie fat bass groove of ZZ Top that wasn't all that familiar with. I knew a couple of those songs, but when I really dug into their old catalog, I saw that these guys are friggin' awesome. There's just so much soul in that band, and there's so much, again, the guitar licks, the bass lines. I think ZZ Top is a great band, and plus I also like the on Flight of the Conchords, they were referred to as ZZ Top, so. I feel like when I'm drafting ZZ Top, I'm also drafting the fact that the letter Z is called Z in Canada. So give me ZZ Top in the first round.
Awesome. Okay, second round. I'm going to start one off. So I don't know if you can think of anyone else, but the only professional athlete I can ever remember who has double Zs is Zarly Zalapsky, former defenseman. NHL defenseman. And I think one of the most fun names, if you follow sports, like there's just names that are fun to say. I don't think there's many names more fun to say than Zarly Zalapsky. Also sounds like Slapshot a little bit, his last name, Zarly Zalapsky. I couldn't think of anyone else, maybe who I've ever heard of, but definitely not a pro athlete who has double Zs. So, if I'm going to wear one Z with my last name, I got to really respect someone who wears two of them.
It's always fun when defensive players have that offensive skill, and Zalapsky was one of those guys. I think he also I remember him in Carolina. He may have even played for the Whalers, which I have a soft spot in my heart for the Hartford Whalers. You know, for the theme song, for the logo. So I've often worn a Hartford Whaler hat on this show. I'm not doing so today, but yeah, long live Zarly Zalapsky. He's a great pick. I'm going to go with. We don't have any rules for these drafts. They're silly, and you know I even just try to do these almost off the top of my head. I put like 5 minutes of thought into it, and I don't want to make this into an internet search draft. I just want to have fun with it. And so I'm going to draft pizza. Pizza doesn't begin with the letter Z, but it obviously has two Z's in it. And some people refer to it as Za. If you were to play Scrabble and use the word list that is acceptable in tournament Scrabble, the word Za is actually acceptable. And also just a nod to growing up in Chelmsford, one of my favorite pizza places was a place called Zesty Pizza. That really good people there, really good pizza there. And when I first started writing at Yahoo, the word zesty was a word I would use a lot. I would talk about somebody who was off on a, you know, they're hitting a zesty 386 in May or something. And some people started calling me zesty as a, you know, I think it was a positive way. I don't think it was a pejorative, but they'd say, oh, a nice column the other day, zesty. So. You know, pizza, za, zesty, whatever it is, they're all tied to me. So let's take pizza in round two.
I love it. Maybe the perfect food. It's pretty hard to make a bad pizza. So I think that's a good call. I stayed a little more straight line and thought of things that start with Z, although I think that was very creative to go with the double Z's in the middle. For my third round pick, I'm going to, and this is just a fun trivia question, win a free drink at a bar. If you didn't know, as far as I know, the last person in alphabetical order, I'm always interested in these things. So I was with a Z last name. I was always last on the class list, you know, in school, always picking last for everything. Tony Zick, who actually was in Yankees camp this year, but had a couple successful fantasy seasons with the Mariners, was kind of on the closer radar a couple years ago. Z-Y-C-H. He is the last person in the all-time alphabetical roster for Major League Baseball. So if you ever want to win, like I say, win a free beer in a bar and throw that question out, there's ZYCK. I bet Tony was last on every class list of every class he ever was in growing up. I mean, think about how many baseball players we've had, and he's the very last one. There was one year in school where I had one kid below me on the class list, and I really enjoyed that for one year.
That's pretty awesome. Oh, by the way, did you, growing up with a Z last name, was that more feature for you or more bug for you?
I don't know. I never really thought about it too much. It was always easy to find your name whenever you went to anything like that. Actually, when I was a kid, I would say having the first name Fred was a little more of a bug for me than having a last name with a Z, just because I find in our generation, there aren't a lot of Freds. Like, there's a lot of Freds, I think, in that older generation. There aren't a lot of Freds anymore. So that one, I was named after a grandfather, and that one bugged, just because that's the name people call you and everything, and there were no other Freds in my whole school and things like that. As I got older, I didn't mind it because, like, it's a little more unique, right? And there's not a lot of Freds around anymore. So that one was more for me. Zinke's also an easy one for kids to come up with a lot of rhymes for. So, but it was all in good fun when we were kids at school.
And, you know, if you want to go into the catacombs of the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast, by the way, the award-winning fantasy baseball podcast, we won the FSWA award last year for fantasy baseball. Fred and I actually did draft Freds at Fred's suggestion, and that was a lot of fun, and I think that was a really great draft. I'm going to draft the zero, which is, you know, of course, we learned to count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Maybe we should count at zero. It's got a cool name. It's got a cool sound to it. One of the Schoolhouse Rock songs was My Hero Zero, and they did a really good job with understanding what zero means. And I think, as you know, if you're talking about things that are binary, they're either zero or one. You know, if you multiply anything by zero, it's zero. We want our paychecks to have the extra zero in them. I just think there's just something cool about the number zero.
Absolutely. And whenever an athlete uses zero on the back of their jersey or double zeros, that's always.
I love that. I love the zeros and doubles. Yeah, Robert Parrish, Adam Ottavino, Al Oliver wore zero. He said the O stood for Oliver. But I'm trying to think what other great zeros there were. Gilbert Arenas, right? Agent Zero.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I love that Parrish was the double zero. Ken Burrow was double zero. I think we need double zero needs to make a comeback.
You're right. I think that's an awesome, awesome jersey number. For my next pick, I'm going to go with, this is a really oddball one, I guess, because I guess it's not really a word, but I'm going to go with Z's, as in like triple Z's, as in getting some sleep. The older I get, the more, the more I appreciate, you know, when you're young, you just, sleep just comes and goes. You don't really care. I find the older I get, the more I appreciate all the benefits that come with getting a good night's sleep. You appreciate good sleep when you can get it and where you can get it. So I think that's one where at 20, I wouldn't have even thought about sleep as a thing. You know, in my 40s now, I definitely think about sleep as sometimes a cherished commodity. And so, you know, it may not be a word, but I think getting some good Z's is, and I find it's kind of, most people love, whether it's whether they're nappers or sleep in people or go to bed early, but most people love a good set of Z's.
Agree. And I believe in a sleep and let sleep mindset. I love taking a nap while the golf tournament's on a mm-hmm. Sunday. Yeah, that's a great pick. It was on my board. I'm running out of picks here. I'm running the risk of you depleting my board. I thought Z's was, you know, maybe something that you might have overlooked, but yeah, the power of the nap, the power of the Z's. Very strong value there. I'm going to go with XYZ, which is, you know, people used to say ABC when they came up with an example for something. You know, how do you feel about theory ABC? Are we going to agree with, you know, ABC? That's kind of turned into XYZ now. Mm-hmm. And I've always liked the sound of that. When I would register to play in poker rooms in Detroit, XYZ was my call signal, for lack of a better name. I just didn't feel like saying Scott, so XYZ was what I would say. Sometimes I'd walk in the room and people would say, hey, XYZ. I'm not sure if they knew my first name. They just knew me as XYZ. So again, technically doesn't start with a Z, but it's got a Z in it. And I just like the way XYZ sounds together. Certain letters in the alphabet go together, and I think XYZ have become a thing.
Absolutely. So for my last pick, I'm going to go unusual a little bit for one of these drafts. I bet you've never had a flower picked in one of these drafts, but I'm going to go with zinnias, which is one of my favorite flowers. Zinnia. I have a little bit of a green thumb and don't mind getting out in the summer, you know, with my wife and doing some gardening and things like that. Zinnias, I think, are one of the best flowers. So if anyone wants a free gardening tip at the end of this podcast, zinnias are one of the best flowers that, you know, annual flowers that you can plant. They come up tall. They come up all summer. They look really nice, all kinds of colors. So for my, I didn't think in all the times that we would record these podcasts that I would ever talk about flowers. I wouldn't say I'm an expert at all, but I think zinnias are an underrated flower that should be in a lot more gardens than they are.
I'm kind of a daisy person because I like the James logo. But yeah, there you go. Green thumb tips from a man of all seasons, Fred Zinke, gardening at night. I got to make one more pick. You know, I was considering the new Zoo Review, not a terrible children's show, but it had a kind of a catchy theme song, although maybe it's more of an earworm that you would kind of throw at somebody so it would get stuck in their head. There's also the children's show Zoom that, you know, Zoom has kind of taken over the world now where we can't hang out like we usually do. But, you know, I'm just going to go back to Scrabble and just pick the letter Z in Scrabble. It's a 10-point letter. ZA, as I mentioned earlier, is acceptable in Scrabble. And so if you're playing Scrabble, especially at a tournament setting, if you're competitive at it, and you draw the Z, or if you're in Canada, you draw the Z if you're in the States, it's a very valuable letter. It's considered one of the 10 power tiles. It has positive value, positive EV, as you may say. So let's dig into the Scrabble bag and let's pull out the letter Z. Every time I get a Z, unless I'm trying to groom my rack for a bingo, the Z can kind of get in the way of that. You know, though, sometimes you'll get an IZE bingo. Another really cool thing that I don't know if people realize this with Scrabble. So the word Z is acceptable in Scrabble. And a lot of games may start with the word Z, Z-E-D. And then later what will happen is you can extend that word to a word that ends in like I-Z-E-D, you know, motorized or powerized or whatever it is, lyricized. So, you know, that's one of the cool ways to extend a word in Scrabble is you have Zed on the board, and then there's a lot of ways that words end in the Z-E-D. So I think one time I won a game because I extended a Z-E-D into something longer. So just something, you know, to expand your strategy as you're playing Scrabble. So let's go with the Scrabble tile Z to complete our 5-round Z draft.
Nice. So if you're, so I'm not a competitive Scrabble player, but if you are a competitive Scrabble player and you get the Z, you're excited. You're happy.
Yes, generally. Gotcha. It's
usually
the letters excited. the letters have contextual value.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can get the Z at the wrong time. Again, if you were grooming your rack to play a bingo to use all your tiles the next turn, a lot of times the Z gets in your way, and then you kind of have to shed it quickly. Although now that, you know, there are more shorter words that have the Z in them than there used to be, it's easier to get rid of it, and not only get rid of it, but really weaponize it and score a lot of points with it. So, yeah, generally, the bottom line is the Scrabble tiles in and of themselves, they have values that people have figured out, people smarter than me, what the tile is generally worth in a nutshell. But then it's so contextual. It's like anything else. It's just, you know, you have to contextualize it to what the board looks like, what the tile pool looks like, what your other letters are, stuff like that. But generally, the Z does have a positive expected value. Now, hey, Fred Zinke, man, you want to talk positive expected value. You can't do much better than this guy. We appreciate him hanging out with us today. Fred, tell everybody what you're working on and how they can hang out with you.
Yeah, I got a lot of articles coming out in the next couple of weeks to try to get everybody prepped for the season if they want to sign up for those Yahoo drafts, which I think is a great idea. I think this season's going to be a blast, assuming we get through it, which I do think we will. But a lot of articles coming out, schedule analysis, looking at some crazy stats that we're going to see, talking about bullpens to target, bullpens to avoid. You know, I think for people who have been sitting around waiting for some sports to happen, like, it's happening, you know, so go ahead and sign up for some of these contests and enjoy it. Yeah, it won't be a regular season. I didn't use that right. It won't be a normal season, but it could be a lot of fun, and I think it will be.
Amen, brother. Well, hey, great to talk to you today. Really fun show. Hope you guys enjoyed it. For Fred Zinke, for our man Raghu, producing us over in sunny California, keeping us on the air and sounding good, I'm Scott Pianowski. Thanks for hanging out with us. We have another great guest already lined up for next week. We're going to have a lot of predictions on this funky season coming at you a week from now. So, hey, go play some Z words on the Scrabble board. Go do some fantasy drafting. We'll talk to you next week.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.